This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Trevor Chappell.
Charles Turner is the CEO of the New South Wales Institute of Sport, also an Olympian, where he competed in three Olympic Games. Hello, Charles.
Morning, Trevor. How are you?
I'm very, very well indeed. What's it? How important is it for people, especially in sports that aren't super well recognised and don't get the media, how important are the Olympic Games for sports like water polo?
Well, it's very important, of course. This is our one time every 4 years where we do get some publicity. And, of course, it's a very important thing to be part of the Olympic family. I mean, that really is the major reason why a lot of people do compete.
It was interesting. I heard one of the golfers making a comment about why it was that he wasn't competing and the importance. And he was saying that when he started playing golf, competing in the Olympic Games wasn't the most important thing to him. And I think that's one of the things that people realise with other sports coming in. If it's not the primary focus, then perhaps it needs to stick to the sports that is the primary focus for.
Yes, look, I guess that's probably true. And but there's a bit of a mistake about being part of the Olympics, and I think that does draw in most of the sports.
So even with tennis, even though you may be able to win a Grand Slam, to also have a gold medal isn't a bad thing to have.
I think there are a lot of people would like to do that. I mean, interestingly enough, Novak Djokovic is going to be competing in Rio and arguably the best player in the world at the moment. And if he's prepared to go, then I think obviously he certainly feels it's very important.
Charles, is it a four-year build-up for people who do compete, or is it go for longer than that, but we only see possibly a year of it?
Oh, look, I think it is much longer than 4 years, depending on the sport, but it's the most unusual for someone to take up the sport and then 4 years later to be competing in the Games. So it's normally at least eight and sometimes a lot longer.
When you do that, because we see the end result where athletes will be competing for a medal, one of the things that I wonder is that we're seeing an athlete who is preparing for a two-week window, I suppose, and if they haven't peaked at that exact point in time, then they don't have the opportunities they deserve. And I find that fascinating, because if you happen to get just that little bit sick, if you don't sleep very well, if there are all sorts of things that can go against you.
Yeah, look, that's absolutely right. But, you know, athletes train for this particular 2 weeks. They set their mind in a position whereby they will be ready, and 99% of the athletes are ready on the day.
How is that, though? Does that mean that there's we know who the athletes are, but the people who support those athletes, there must be a large group of people that do that as well?
Yeah, look, I think these days, mostly, there is a team around all of the athletes and a team of people helping them. They have people from sports scientists to sports psychologists, those sorts of people. And most people who get to the level of the Olympic Games have the opportunity to work with those group of people. Organisations like our own, the New South Wales Institute of Sport, we have a range of those sort of services available for athletes. And of course, most of the states now, well, all of the states have institutes, and the Australian Institute of Sport provide that sort of service across the nation.
With the Institutes of Sport, how is it that they identify the people that are selected for those? And also, it may be a sport that isn't necessarily well recognised that a young person becomes good at. Does the Institute of Sport then go, well, hang on, we may not have somebody, but we'll look for someone to assist that particular sports person?
Look, generally athletes are identified by the sport, and the programs that our organisation runs are partnerships with the national bodies and the state bodies. So the athletes are identified by the national bodies, and then we develop sports programs where a number of athletes are identified within those sports and supported. That's the first opportunity for athletes. The second is individual athletes, and as you suggest, there may be athletes from sports which aren't as popular, perhaps, as others. And then there's an opportunity for those athletes to look for scholarships as individual athletes, and there's still opportunities then for them to be supported through the network of institutes that exist.
Yeah, because it's interesting, because I quite like watching the European handball, when it's on, but Australia doesn't have a team. I wonder if there's a group of people out there that play that game and they go, geez, I wouldn't mind going to the games.
Look, there has been in the past. In fact, Australia had a team in 2000, and what they did is they all got together. And in fact, they lived in around Sydney University, in fact, and they all trained together. And because Australia was able to enter teams in every event in 2000, because yep. We were the host nation, we actually did have a team. But of course, you know, it's very difficult to be able to get to the level you need to be able to play internationally without, you know, quite a bit of resources, and that's why those sports find it difficult, and they do struggle.
How is it? We know what the qualifying requirements are for things like swimming and athletics, where you have a time that's required, as well as that you need to come first, second, or third, or whatever it is. But how is it they work it out for team sports?
Okay, well, I guess it depends on each sport, but I can give you an example of water polo, for example. Water polo, women and men both have to qualify through continental representation. So each of the continents get an opportunity to enter a team. So initially for example, from the last World Championships, the top five teams from the men's championship will automatically qualify, and then through continental representation, so the best of each continent will then get an opportunity. And in the men's competition, there's 12 teams.
And Australia does quite well in the water polo.
Yes, look, I think we'll be pretty hopeful that the women's team in particular will win a medal, and we have the gold medal. The men's team always have it a little bit more difficult because men's water polo is far stronger, particularly in the former Eastern Bloc countries, so the Russians and Yugoslavs, or what used to be Yugoslavia, now Serbia and Croatia, very strong teams. So, you know, we're in with a chance, and it's like every team sport. If you get into the finals, you're always a chance of winning.
Ruthless sport it is.
Oh, ruthless. you've got to be pretty fit.
You've got to be pretty scary too, I reckon. Dicko, good morning.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Good, Dicko.
Years ago, wasn't it the Olympics were actually for non-professionals, amateurs, and I'd actually rather watch the Paralympians than the able body because, I mean, like pro golfers, pro tennis players, I mean, you can watch them on TV all the time, same as the basketball, netball. The majority of the sports that they have in the Olympics, you can watch any time at all.
You wouldn't go as far as to say majority, Dicko, because it isn't often that you'll get to see water polo. It isn't often that you'll get to see...
You can see it on the ABC, I'm sure of it.
Okay. So it's the Paralympic games that you enjoy. What, could you consider it to be purer?
Well, I'd actually rather watch them and have them fully televised than the able-body Olympics.
Charles, there has been a rise in popularity of the Paralympics, which is a terrific thing within itself. Whether or not it takes the place of the Olympics is another thing. But the rise of the Paralympic movement, I guess, would be quite encouraging for people who are involved with the Olympics.
Yeah, look, I think that's right. I think that after the London Games, they certainly did a good job of promoting themselves. There's still, I guess, there's not as much money in the Paralympic movement as there is for some of the other sports, and that makes it difficult for them to obviously train and compete. But it's getting better, and I think that we will see some very outstanding performances in Rio at the Paralympic Games.
But Charles, this has been something that people have talked about with the Olympics and the professionalisation, or for want of a better word, of sport, and that we're seeing more professionals now being able to compete in the Olympics than in the past. Is that something that's considered to be a problem for the Olympic movement, or is it just the way we move forward with the times?
I think it's just an involvement of sport in general. I think what we're seeing is the advent of event-type sports, if I can put it that way. In the 2020 Games, sports like surfing, for example, are being mooted as possibly coming in. And sports that have transitioned into this different type of arrangement, whereby like triathlon, it's actually an event rather than a sport, where sport goes over a number of days, like the team sport. So, and that's why I think that the rugby sevens is coming in and it's a popular sport. because you can have a result in a couple of days rather than waiting for a week to find out who wins.
Which is why we'll never see cricket in there, thank goodness.
That's probably right.
Bill has said, I love watching the archery. These people are trying to hit a target, which is about the size of a drawing pin held at arm's length, all in weather conditions. How do we look with archery?
Yeah, look, we're not as strong as we have been. We put a lot of energy into the archery sport in around about 2000, and unfortunately we've gone down a bit since then. We had a really good coach from Korea at the time. It's a very interesting sport to watch. I don't know whether your listeners have watched it much, but they actually don't aim at the target. They actually have to aim several metres above the target to actually get there, so it makes it very much more difficult than it appears.
And the same with shooting as well. How are we looking with shooting?
Yeah, look, shooting, we always have a number of possibilities, and we, once again, there are some. We're on the periphery of looking at medals.
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
Yes, Paul.
Oh, this is a bit of Olympic history. There's a family from Perth, the Pierce family, five brothers, four of whom have played in Olympic hockey. There's Mel, who played in Melbourne in 56. Then you've got Gordon, Eric and Julian. The older brother, Cess, didn't make an Olympic team. But I can't think of another family on earth that has created so many Olympians.
It's interesting with certain sports, Charles, that there are names associated with certain sports. I guess the Neesham family with water polo, which is what you're involved with as well. There are certain family names that are associated with the sports.
Yes, that's true, and we'll see some athletes, some siblings are competing in Rio as well. I mean, the most obvious ones that come to mind are the Campbell sisters. Bronte and Kate Campbell are both medal chances, and they'll be competing in a number of events, and I think they're a very good chance to win at least one gold medal, perhaps even more than one.
We've been strong in cycling for a little while now, and thank goodness to those sisters, as you just mentioned. Are we looking good in the other events around cycling?
Yeah, look, I think we are. I mean, Anna Mears is always a very good chance, and she'll be in the Kieron. There's another really good female athlete in Annette Edmondson, who'll be competing in the Omnium. And the women's pursuit team's a very good chance as well. They've already won the World Championships last year. So there is, particularly in the women, we should be strong. But the cycling program delivers really good results every year. So I think there's some chances are right across the board with it.
Well, I've got a text here saying I'm looking forward to a drug-free Olympics and especially drug-free cycling. This is what we hope for, and we don't want to see any stories coming out of the Olympics about it being drug-free. How much of a testing regime is there gone through as a lead-up? And I guess you'd be very aware of this being part of an institute of sport.
Well, look, obviously, in Australia, we have a very strict regime, and particularly the Australian Olympic Committee has been, strident in their view about trying to make sure that all countries are playing on an even playing field. I think that it's, you know, unfortunately, there's always going to be one or two athletes who think they can break the system, but one likes to think that it'll be a clean games.
We certainly do. Bill, good morning.
How you going, mate? I just think we're becoming elitist. We're not getting what we used to in Australia, where we everyone has an equal opportunity to play the sports. So I find, we're not like we were 50 years ago.
In what way, Bill?
Sports is very dear, so a lot of parents can't afford it. So what you're getting is an elitist at the top, where the average bloke's kids don't get to go and play sports and have a chance at the Olympics anymore.
So
that dream is fading like everything big, I suppose.
Okay, so what you're saying is that, okay, so a young Jack Smith, who is identified as a sports person from the age of seven, will then be taken apart, will be separated and be trained up and recognised as an Olympian from a young age, and it gives the kids who are just running around in the athletic tracks every week not the opportunities.
I don't think that's right at all. I think you'll find that most kids at the age of seven don't get that opportunity because it's far too expensive.
I mean, I would think that there are those stories where you get a young person who is not necessarily from a well-off family proving themselves and working up through a sport.
Oh, look, there are. But look, I think there's some merit in what Bill had to say. I mean, one of the problems that we do have is that because of the, I guess it's television as much as anything, but a lot of the resources now that people have go into the sports that are already popular, the AFLs, the rugby leagues, the rugby union, cricket, they're the ones that make the majority of the money. And, so, you know, with TV rights and that, and also professional sport gets the majority of the income from corporates. So it's not as easy as it once was for athletes to get the sort of support that you need for to be really successful. And I guess that's why the importance of organisations like ours is that we do offer resources that can make it easier for athletes to be successful.
And the thing is that with these sports, and that's one of the wonderful things about the commitment of people who are Olympians and who get to the Olympics, is that they're not from sports that are highly sponsored. They're from sports that they participate in because they have a passion and love for that sport.
Well, that's correct. But even the one, I mean, these days, and because of the great support through the federal government and the state governments, there's a little bit more money around than there once was. So it's easier, but it's still not easy, obviously. You have to be very dedicated, and most athletes who are Olympians work as well. So it's not as if they can just commit themselves full-time to their sport.
Good morning, Norm.
Yeah, the Olympics are a joke. To how people represent their country, how they swap, like us, like Dale Begg-Smith and the pole vaulter and weightlifters, whether we poach them from other countries and they come over here and then they pretend to represent Australia, and all the African people who they're going over to European countries and swap because they can't make their own side in Kenya or Ethiopia, and they go and represent Turkey and all these other countries just for opportunists. Bloody going over to different countries and then proudly waving their flags, going, "I'm Australian, I'm American, I'm English," when they don't even, they've come over there for the last 4 years just to make the side. It's a joke. It really is, representing your country, walking around with your flag on your shoulders, going, "How good am I?" when you only came over here, or when the country's poached you from another, so we can feel good about ourselves and say, "Look, we won the 10,000 metres when the guy's a Kenyan and he's been in the country for 3 years."
Right, yeah, that'll do. Charles, we do have that. I mean, there are people that move between countries and countries for varying reasons, and I guess that's what we need to recognise, are the different reasons that people do that.
Yeah, look, and I suppose, I mean, it's not as easy as it might seem to move countries. We've, in fact, we've supported, we've got a Mexican young guy from Mexico who has just qualified for the Rio Olympics. He's a diver. And, in fact, his name's Kevin, which is a surprisingly funny Mexican name, but that's his name. And but he did it for economic reasons. He came from a very poor family. He was able to get himself across to Australia. He was a very good diver and sought support from the sport. And we're very proud to actually support him going to the Games representing Australia.
Do we have occasions where, though, Australia will go, "Okay, we haven't got one of them, and there's somebody that would like to come here," and we will say, "Yeah, we will welcome you quite happily." But it's not necessarily for winning a gold medal for the country, but I guess it brings expertise in that sport into the country.
Look, I think it would be fair to say that particularly before the 2000 Olympic Games, when we were very keen in Australia to make sure that we had a very good Games and we wanted to be represented in as many sports as we could, that was we did have a targeted approach to being in expertise so that we could have good representation, and we did bring in some coaches from overseas in particular, but we haven't. I don't think Australia targets athletes from other countries to make our representation look better. I don't think we do that.
I mean, take a look at what the English did. How many of our coaches did they nick leading up to the Games in England?
Yeah, look, I think I know for a fact there was some of our coaches left from our organisation, but that's But that's sport, and people, I mean, it's a professional industry, and people have to go and make money where they can.
Sue, good morning.
Oh, yes, good morning. I used to like, or I do still like the cycling, and I love the marathon, but the last Olympics, I got caught up with the rowers and also the BMX, that young, the young girl that was in the, I don't know what her name was now, but the BMX bikes.
I love
it. I was just enthralled.
You know, I love, I mean, I don't get to watch rowing very much, but I love watching the rowing in the Olympics, and it's one thing I really look forward to.
Yes, yeah, so thank you for your program.
Good on you, Sue.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Rowing I look forward to all the time, Charles, and it's not a sport that you get to watch very often, but Australia, again, performs very well in rowing.
It does indeed, and I can give you a tip on people to watch. So you should be looking for Kim Crowe in the rowing, in the women's single scull. She's a very good chance, and also our men's quad scull has a good chance of a gold medal.
And BMX as well, which is one of the newly introduced sports.
Yeah, so that's a really good example of the way that the Olympics is going for. That's an event-type sport, what I call an event-type sport, where the whole event, you know, doesn't take a number of days. It's over very quickly. And that's the sort of entertainment people are looking for.
Someone said, what a horrible, bitter little man. Someone said, someone else said, go Norman. Wade joins us. Good morning, Wade.
Morning. How are you?
Good, Wade.
Just a couple of points on the rowing. Also, the women's quad's got a good chance to medal, having won some events recently. The previous call, about two calls ago, was talking about the cost of kids' sport. And I think the point he was making was if you want to go and play soccer or rugby league or union, your registration fees are $400 to $500 just to play kids' sport. And as he said, sometimes that is quite expensive. I'm calling on the basis of I've got a very good water polo playing daughter, and she's represented Australia twice at under 18, under 20 level. And a person said to me, oh, look, you know, water polo is a rich person's sport. I've gone, why? You need a pair of togs and a cap and you're away. She said, yeah, you wait. We've probably spent over the last 5 years between $5,000 and $10,000 a year on funding her trips, because there's no funding from anyone else. It's a parent-funded sport, and even when she was in the even high level playing, well, she played a game for the Stingers. The access to funding is very, very tight.
Wade, thank you. This is where, I mean, it's a commitment of parents. And are you saying that there needs to be more support for parents to make sure that all kids get an equal opportunity?
Well, I guess so, because there are parents who we've been in touch with and met along the road, and they just struggled terribly trying to pay these. A trip overseas will go for 3 or 4 weeks, and you're looking at $6,000 to $7,000 for one trip. And if your son or daughter is a good standard, there will also be interstate trips.
And imagine if you, Wade, imagine if you're on the border, that you're going, okay, well, geez, I would love you to have the opportunity, but I don't know if we can afford it, and we're not sure if you're going to make it to that level.
Look, there's lots of parents out there who are struggling every day, going, look, you are showing all the signs, you're getting all the selections, but we just can't afford to send you on those trips because they are parent-funded.
Yeah, Charles?
Look, I sympathise very much with that, with the attitude of your caller. I mean, the reality is there isn't enough money in sport, and we want every child to be able to play a sport that they want to play. And it is expensive, but sport's not the only activity that costs money. Our daughter played the piano, and it costs a fortune to have her play the piano. And so, yeah, that's the unfortunate reality. There isn't enough money to go around. People have to make choices, unfortunately. When they get to the highest level, one hopes that they can get enough to at least be able to get the sport and pay for their international trips. And I'd be, my view is that it's just the way it is. And in Australia, we want all of our children to participate as often as we can.
It is. I mean, I understand that it is just the way that it is. But the shame is that it's a... It's a shame where socioeconomic reasons are the things that are stopping the progression of some young sports people and not necessarily a talent issue.
Yes, look, I think that's right. And I mean, but
the alternative to that is to have a state-sponsored type arrangement like the East Germans did, and I don't think anybody wants that.
Yeah. Charles, good morning.
Hi, Trevor. How are you?
Good, Charles.
Yeah, it's just it's sort of like a side issue, but I look at it that, I mean, I love the Olympics, and I've had, I'm fortunate to have some family, a member of my family involved in past years, but what I'm starting to see now, I have a daughter in her early 20s who's doing a lot of equestrian coaching, and she's benefiting from coaching systems, not just in equestrian, but on a national coaching scheme. That is so much of that has been developed through things like the AIS, and it permeates down to the grassroots level, and so that the guidelines that she's given and the training she's given has come because of those programs.
I wouldn't have even thought about that. That's one of the important things that institutes of sport do as well, Charles.
Oh, yeah, it is. I mean, we have to recognise that you have to develop people for the future, and it's true what your caller said, that the AIS have a very good coach education program, and which is benefiting many sports. We also, in our organisation, we have it as a priority to try and develop the next generation of coaches.
If you'd like to join us, 1-300-800-222 is our number. Thanks very much for that, Charles. Good morning, Kevin.
How are you?
Good, Kev.
That's good. Yeah, I've been in a pistol shooting for years, and my son was an excellent, you know, international junior champion 3 years in a row. And we had the same problem with funding. You just can't get it as a shooter. It's a bit unfortunate.
Kevin, what's it like going from that level, from going to being a champion at a junior level to the senior level? Is that where the big kick is?
No, he was, when he was shooting junior level, he was probably only 10 points under the senior scores.
Mm.
So he was, but we had the trouble, they put him in the high performance squad, and he was only just sort of 19. They wanted him to just be ring up and say be in Sydney, be in Canberra for training, and you know there was very little funding, and of course I got him there, but I just couldn't sort of keep it going.
Yeah, and that's Charles, is there a big difference between being at an elite level and a junior level and then the move up to senior?
Well, there is. I mean, as far as funding is concerned, the money doesn't trickle down very far. And it is difficult. It is very difficult for the younger athletes in particular. We have a particular program that actually recognises that, particularly for junior athletes competing at the World Championship level. Most of the sports don't have the resources to be able to fully fund those sorts of trips, so we have a special program where we try and help those athletes. But it is very difficult.
Tony, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I'd like to comment about the rowing. My understanding is that this is the first time for about well over 40 years that Australia hasn't got a men's senior eight, no, a women's senior eight in the Olympic Games because we failed to meet the criteria.
Geez, that's a shame. I love watching the eights. And that's sort of one of the prestige events, Charles.
Yeah, look, it is, and it's a bit disappointing. Well, very disappointing, obviously, but we were talking earlier about the need to, in fact, you have to qualify to compete in the Games. And unfortunately, both the women's eight and the men's eight failed to qualify at the World Championships last year.
One of the areas that Australia is increasingly getting better in is in gymnastics. If you take a look at our competitiveness in gymnastics, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, we're seeing that Australia is far more competitive now in gymnastics, Charles.
Yeah, look, it's a very, very difficult sport, gymnastics. It's one of the sports where you have to spend a huge amount of time from a very young age. And it's true that Australia has had some good results in the last three Olympic Games, but the resources required to really have a successful program are so high that it's very disappointing for the young athletes who are trying to get to the top, because it's a very competitive market that they're in, and so. Interestingly enough, I mean, the Americans spend a fortune on their program, and there's a you know, there's an athlete called Simone Biles, for example, and she's the best in the world, and she's been in the sport since she was four, and she's now 19. So, I mean, they're, it's one of those sports which takes a long, long time and a lot of resources, and so it's just a hard sport to compete in.
It's one of those sports, though, as a watcher, as a person that's watching the Olympics, we like to watch Australia compete, and we don't have to win a medal. We like to see our gymnasts just doing well.
Yeah, well, that's true, and I think that because it's a very graceful sport, particularly in the floor events and things like that, and I think people do enjoy it. And we were talking earlier about the importance of the games. I think once every 4 years, people do like to see how we are competing against the rest of the world.
Anton, good morning.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Good.
It was good that you were just talking about gymnastics. Both my daughters competed both up to level 10. And my other daughter, she also competed acro on the world stage in China, Putian, this year. She came sixth in the world, and it's a very expensive sport. It's also very competitive, absolutely.
Isn't it wonderful, though, that because, as I said, I don't necessarily watch it to see us win a medal, which would be lovely, but it's terrific to see Australia doing much better now than we ever have before.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what you were saying before is the Americans and so forth spend a fortune on gymnastics. You know, Australia, it's very, very self-funded. So, you know, there's a lot of, trying to organise money, raffles, barbecues, all that sort of stuff to try and fund the money for the girls to go. But, you know, like being a spectator, watching your daughter represent in China was amazing.
It's, but that's one of the things that I quite like. But this is me sitting on the outside saying that it's quite quaint that people need to raise money for their kids or for people to be able to participate in the games. But I think that that's one of the community things about Australia's representation. It's sports that are lesser known, and that is a good thing in some ways, Anton.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, you also get a lot of the parents pulled together, and I think sometimes I would say to my wife, gosh, this is too expensive, or that's too expensive, but I wouldn't change it in a fit. And the reason being is that the families that you associate with sort of high-level sports are normally, you know, good people. The kids, my daughters are both very good at school, and I attribute that to sports. Actually, this one that we talk about with acro, she's been a straight-A student right through school. She's year 12 now, so right through her school, she's straight-A. And I really attribute that to high-level sport.
Good on you, Anton. Thank you.
Thank you.
We've spoken a little bit about rowing. We've spoken a little bit about cycling. Swimming is one that we always love, Charles. Have we got some good chances in the pool?
Oh, I think we have. I think that you've got people like Mitch Larkin, I think, who's the backstroker. He's, I think, a very good chance of medals in both the 100 and the 200 metres backstroke. Got the Campbell sisters, Kate and Bronte. They're very good chances. Emily Seabom. We have Cameron Delaney. There's the women's 400 freestyle. I think I mentioned those. Mm. So, look, swimming is a very important part of the Olympic Games for us because it's the beginning of the Games. And once you get on a bit of a roll and the other athletes see successful competition, and that gives everyone a lift. And I think that that was one of, I think, the downsides for London, is that the swimmers didn't do as well as they normally do. And so it then took some time for the other athletes to get into the winning form, if you like.
Charles, how important is it for people who are individual athletes to come together as part of a team? The Australian swimming team, we have what's considered to be the Olympic team, where you get together individuals. And how important is that for those individuals to become part of a unit?
Oh, look, I think it is very important. In fact, it's about developing a culture within the team that is one that supports each other. And I think arguably there were some issues, I think, in London in the swimming team. They weren't as together as they might have been. And I think it does have an effect on the whole team. So that's really important. I know that swimming have spent a lot of time and energy ensuring that they have the right culture. And most of the bigger teams have the same sort of effect of being able to engender that sort of enthusiasm so that the athletes can feel part of the, and you do anyway as part of the Olympic Games. I mean, you do feel a great deal of camaraderie around the other events.
Team sports, Australia's always done well in hockey, both men and women's hockey. Is it looking like we've got chances there?
Oh, very much so. I think the men's hockey team in particular are looking very good for a gold medal. The women, they're at least a top three chance, and on the day they can beat anybody.
With the hockey and how well we've gone there, Australia, it's always men's hockey. The Olympics has always been a little bit of a bogey for them, hasn't it?
Oh, it has, but, I mean, we have won in the last three Olympics. We've had medals and gold medals. So I think that right at the moment, I don't think that you'd be a brave man if you didn't bet them on them for a medal.
Well, take a look at basketball, women's basketball. Again, we're very, very strong. We saw, I think it was the under-17s just recently win the world title for basketball. Are we going to see a strong women's side?
Yeah, we'll have a strong women's side. I think they're, once again, they'd be a medal chance. And they've been most unlucky not to win the gold medal. So I think they'd be hoping they can do it this time.
And men's basketball, obviously it's a very, very difficult thing to beat America. But they're hoping, and we went close to getting a medal last time.
Yeah, look, they're always very competitive. And I suppose it's a very much stronger competition basketball across the world for men than it is for women, and that's not to take anything away from the women because the American competition is very strong, but there's some very good European competitions which have very large members of in national teams, so it's very competitive. And but look, if they get through in team sports, if you get through to the final round, you're always a chance for a medal.
With basketball, the future is looking very bright for basketball in Australia with young draftees into the NBA. And is it looking good throughout the institutes of sport for basketball?
Yeah, look, it's not a sport. Because they have a very strong national basketball league in Australia, they don't actually, not a lot of athletes are in the institute programs in the States. The AAS has had a development program for many years, and I think a lot of them come through that program. But I think they do trade off the opportunities to play in the university system in America, which gives them another opportunity for development, which a lot of sports don't have.
But also, I would presume that the up until probably 17 is where the nurturing is done within Australia.
That would be right, yes. And I think that, and then they, the NBA, the local national league is the training ground for international competition.
We've got very good sailors. Are we looking forward to medals in sailing?
I think so. I think outstanding would be Matthew Belcher and Will Ryan in the 470. I think they're a very good chance, and there's a number of other really good athletes who would have chance. We always do well in sailing. They've got a wonderful program. And with a fantastic coach. He's interesting. He's a former Russian coach. So we were talking before about, but he's been here many years now.
Which other sports should we be watching closely for the chances of medals?
Well, look, I think if you're talking about from Australia, I mean, I think the women's seven, which is the women's rugby sevens, which is a new event, and they're ranked number one in the world at the moment. I think, it's a sport I like to watch, and I think they're one to watch. I think we already mentioned sports like women's water polo, women's hockey team, men's hockey team, some of the rowing events. I mean, I think we've picked up most of the ones. I think there's some opportunities also in track and field, which is very competitive. But Danny Samuels, who's in the discus, she's a former world champion. And we've got Jared Tarrant, who's a walker, who recently was able to get a gold medal after they disqualified the Russian who won the event in London. And so we've got some outside chances. And the beauty about the Olympics is there's always some athletes who we've never heard of come from sports, which we don't, but doesn't get a lot of publicity, and they come through and they win medals.
What do you like watching the most, apart from the water polo, Charles?
I just like watching all the sports. I really like, to me, we work very hard as an organisation to try and help the athletes as best as we can leading up to the games. And then for 2 weeks, we get the chance to sit there and look at the product of our labour. So I really just, we kick back and we actually have a bit of a break and we say, well, you know, try and share in the successes of the athletes.
So you don't actually work at all during the day? You'll sit up at night and watch the Olympics?
We go to work and we have the television on and we watch it.
From the start to the end.
That's it.
Have you got any young people participating that you've trained?
Oh, yeah, we're from our organisation. Oh, yeah, well, we're having some chances. We have a really good diving program. So Melissa Wu, she's 24, but in fact this is her third Olympic Games.
And we'll look forward to watching Melissa. The news is coming up, but thank you very much for joining us, Charles.
No, my pleasure.